This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Jets control the puck off that faceoff. Up top as Bufflin gets it to settle down to the near side for Wheeler. Steps off the wall. Cross ice pass for Laine. Shot, he scores! Patrick Laine with his team leading 23rd. It's a power play goal, and we are tied at one. Wheeler took a body check to make the play. Far side, Morrissey winds up, slap shot, stopped, rebound to the side of the net, pushed back out in front, and it went between the legs of one of the Jets. Stays inside the zone. Wheeler let a shot go, stop, rebound. They're banging away at the score! Kyle Connor at the side of the net. It's an even strength goal. Winnipeg's first lead of the night, and it's 2-1 Jets. Battle for it. Over the far side, centered out in front, shot, rebound, they score! Ryan Little dug the puck out of the corner, went to the front of the net, shot came in from Ehlers, it was stopped by Domingue, he backheads it home, 3-1 Winnipeg. Now Point moves in, far side for Johnson, he let a shot go, what a stop by Hutchinson. Chaperoned into one of the corner, time will tick off, and Winnipeg will extend their winning streak at home to 7 straight. They knock off the number one team in the National Hockey League, the Tampa Bay Lightning. The final score, Winnipeg 3, Tampa Bay 1.
On the strength of Laine, Connor, and Little's 3 goals, the Winnipeg Jets defeat the Tampa Bay Lightning by a 3-1 margin last night at Bell MTS Place. The best team in the league, standings-wise, comes in and gets defeated by the Jets. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live via the iHeartRadio app and at TSN1290.ca, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. Drew Mindell, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in the studio for the next 2 hours. We have a jam-packed 2 hours for you on this Wednesday evening. It's, of course, hashtag Bell Let's Talk Day. That's the priority today. You know, we talk about the games that are the hockey games that we cover, and they truly are games, and that really comes to fruition and becomes crystal clear on a day like today when we're talking about such an important issue like mental health, and we'll touch on that throughout the course of the program. But last night in Winnipeg at Bell MTS Place, it was a victorious one for the Winnipeg Jets. I thought Tampa Bay, as he was the better of the two teams for the first 20 minutes, but for the final two periods, I thought the Jets took it to the Lightning and affirmed their standing as one of the top teams in the NHL.
Yeah, Drew, you could probably give, you know, Tampa Bay the advantage in that first period, but I thought it was pretty even. You know, Matthew Pekka obviously, you know, gets that beautiful goal and gives the Lightning that lead. But I mean, that second period, guys, it was all Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And they badly outshot the Lightning. They badly outchanced the Lightning, and they badly outskated the Lightning. And to me, the game was won there in the second period. And that's really the, you know, the all important period when you have a close game like that, right? And, you know, you got to give the Jets a lot of credit. No Jacob Trouba, no Mark Scheifele. You know, you've got a Michael Hutchinson who gets into town at noon, Sean, and, you know, basically just has enough time to stretch it out, get down to the rink, and then lace up the pads and play his first NHL game of the year. So, I mean, the Jets deserved that win, Drew. They worked their buns off, and they showed the number one team in the NHL, as you mentioned, that they can skate with them and they can be just as good as them. And, you know, the Lightning, sure, you know, they didn't have their number one goalie in net, and they're missing Andre Palat, but you could say the same thing for the Jets without Scheifele and Trouba, as I mentioned. So, you know, a very big win for the Jets here, a great way to kick off this homestand. And, you know, for me, it's almost bordering on absurd, as you've said on Twitter, Drew, the way the Jets are playing at home. They just don't lose. They've only lost 3 games all year in regulation at home. It's really incredible what they're doing at home. They're basically unbeatable right now, but it was an all-around, you know, team effort. You know, Kyle Connor starts the night on the fourth line, gets the game-winning goal. I thought Tucker Poolman, you know, did a really good job, you know, coming into the lineup for Jacob Trouba. So all around, just a really impressive effort against the league's best.
Yeah, Sean, I mean, you look at the Jets' effort last night, and we mentioned off the start, it's amazing how it's such a game of inches. Tampa Bay, I thought, you know, the better of the two teams in the first period. Then early in the second period, Yanni Gourde comes down and rips the shot past Michael Hutchinson, but he hits the goalpost. And had he been able to score there, had it been, you know, a couple inches to the left as opposed to a couple inches to the right, it's probably a 2-0 Tampa Bay lead. Instead, what happens, the Jets are able to get their first power play opportunity of the game, and then Chris Kunitz, while trying to kill the penalty on that power play, flips the puck over the glass. It's a 5-on-3 for the Jets. They make no mistake. Wheeler feathers the pass over to Laine, who, I mean, almost effortlessly wires it past Louis Domingue, and rather it being than it being 2-0 Tampa Bay, it's 1-1, and really from there on, you could sort of saw that as the TSN turning point, in that the Jets found their skating legs. I thought they skated better throughout the final 40 minutes. Well, Tampa Bay sort of fell off a little bit, and the Jets are able to go home with that 3-1 victory.
Yeah, there were storylines aplenty entering this game for sure. You want to talk just about lineups in general. No Mark Scheifele, no Jacob Trouba, no Connor Hellebuyck. You put that up against the top team in the NHL. You're going into that game pretty nervous, but the Jets, like you guys talked about, managed to pull out another home win. It's unbelievably impressive what these guys have been able to do on home ice. Granted, you know, Andre Vasilevsky also getting the night off, but still, you got to look at the way, this is the way, a couple things that I wanted to talk about. First, I thought a big moment was early in the game when the Jets killed that Dustin Byfuglien penalty.
Well, he took an early first-period penalty, and he took an early third period.
42 seconds into the game, the Jets are shorthanded with a goalie making his first start in the NHL this season after traveling from Mars or wherever he came from. What
Utica, New York.
There we go. Yeah sure.
They have steamed hams up in Utica.
Might as well been when they were breaking down his travels itinerary. And then they kill off that penalty. The crowds, you can feel the crowd start to get into it. The Jets were kind of on their heels a bit in that first, and then you talked about it, Drew. That second period, they come alive, and what a pass by Blake Wheeler. Something Ray Ferraro points out on the broadcast that I found very interesting was originally Wheeler tries to feather the pass from almost along the wall, and Domingue kind of reads the play, makes the save, and then Wheeler moves his body, kind of, he fakes shot, pulls himself into the middle of the ice to shorten the pass length. Domingue can't really read the play. He's got to respect the shot. And then you said it, Drew, Laine just not going to miss from that close. And it was all kind of, that really turned the tide, in my opinion. The Lightning were back on their heels. And how about Adam Lowry's return and what that line was able to do to the Lightning top line?
Well, I think that's the most impressive aspect of the Jets game last night, is that Adam Lowry, in his first game back in the lineup, along with his line mates Andrew Kopp and Joel Armia, alongside the defensive pair primarily of Josh Morrissey and Tyler Myers. Ezra, you want to answer that phone call while you're on air?
Yeah, sorry about that, boys.
Okay. Anybody we know?
The space station.
I don't know who it is.
You don't know who it is. Okay. Anyways, the five-man unit for the Jets there, Lowry, Armia, Kopp, Morrissey, and Myers, limit the best line in hockey, Stamkos, Kucherov, and the Mesnikov, to a grand total of 2 shots on goal.
Yeah, that line looked pretty pedestrian all night. And, you know, Sean, I want to go back to the point you made about the early penalty kill by the Jets, because obviously the Laine goal, Drew, was a big goal in that game. It completely opened up that game. But it was not only that first period penalty kill, which, as you mentioned, Sean, was very important, but early in the third period when Buff took another penalty for tripping on Tyler Johnson, the Jets killed that one off and quietly, Drew. And, you know, I think this is maybe something that has got lost a little bit this year with how well the Jets have played. The Jets are up to 6th overall in the league with their home penalty kill. Well, 6th overall in the league. Their penalty kill was atrocious last year. So not only has the power play been fantastic,
second in the league,
the penalty kill has been fantastic. And on the road, I believe it's something like 15th. It's middle of the pack. But at home especially, that penalty kill has been huge. And I think Blake Wheeler and Brian Little did an excellent job on the penalty kill. You know, and the special teams, for me, have been a huge factor. Paul Maurice talked about it after the game. I mean, now when the Jets go out there on the power play, it's almost like you expect them to score every time.
The power play has been clicking at that impressive of a rate, especially on home ice. And 5-on-3, I mean, I think if you have a 5-on-3 power play, you should score more often than not, but a lot of teams don't. But the Jets just sit there, and I mean, pick your poison. If you're a defense, if you want to, you know, cheat against Patrick Laine 5-on-3, and I don't think anybody would blame you there, because, you know, one of the best shots, if not the best shot in the NHL, then that's fine. I mean, you know, Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, when he's healthy, sounds like he's only a week, maybe 10 days, 2 weeks away. Somebody else is going to be able to hurt you on that power play. And 5-on-3 last night, the Jets made no mistake. And even the Kyle Connor goal, which ends up being the game-winning goal, comes just after another power play expires. So it's not officially a power play goal, but the defender for the or the penalized player for the Lightning, I think it was Nemesnikov, just comes out of the box as Connor is able to slide the puck through. I mean, the Jets, they're clicking at all cylinders. It's almost becoming a bit of a cliche, but that's just how well they're playing, especially on home ice.
Perfectly said. One thing that really caught my attention and something that I thought was worth noting was the way that the team scored their second and third goals. Like, Laine's goal, that's a world-class shot, right?
Sure.
And all we talk about is how much skill the Jets have on their roster. And you hear it from inside the locker room, the skill and such a skilled team and this and that. But you look at the goal, the second and third goal, those are rebound goals that guys are whacking in, fighting in front of the net for their space. Kyle Connor, pardon me, fighting off the defender to bury that rebound. Then Brian Little crashing the net, burying the Matthew Perreault rebound.
Mm-hmm.
These are mucker goals that this team is buying into, that they'll score anyway. You know, you got the skill, but they're also not afraid to get down and dirty, get to those dirty areas, and bash in some rebounds. And I think that is so important when the intensity and the grind picks up as we move into the later portion of the season.
And, Sean, I think there's no doubt that the Jets could have easily had 4 or 5 goals in this game.
Mm-hmm.
They dictated the pace of this game. I mean, there were periods of the first period, Drew, that Tampa Bay, I think, looked like, you know, the quicker team.
Yes.
But for the most part, I mean, this Jets team outworked the Lightning, and they outskated the Lightning. It's really as simple as that. The Lightning, sure, I mean, you could say that this was the first game, you know, coming out of the All-Star break, but it was the first game coming out of the All-Star break for the Jets as well.
So,
the Jets deserved this win.
The Jets certainly deserve the win. They get full marks for the victory. I thought the Lightning, I'm not surprised they sort of tired out there towards the end of the game in that they had, what, 4 All-Stars representing the team. And I think all the other players who aren't necessarily All-Stars, it's not necessarily a relaxing weekend for them, because I think they're involved in sort of some of the hullabaloo that goes on around the All-Star game. That being said, I mean, the Jets, you play the opponent that the schedule dictates that you play. So the Jets did a great job in taking the game to the Lightning for the final 40 minutes. Michael Hutchinson, you know, was very solid in that for the Jets. I don't think that he made any what I'll describe as A-plus saves, but he was solid, and he had the glove working very well, having a couple nifty glove saves. Here's what Michael Hutchinson had to say post-game, talking about, you know, with all the bit of controversy that was surrounding his decision to play in the AHL All-Star game, and if he had a bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, you always have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder with the way the season's been going, but, you know, when you're out there, you don't think about it at all, because, you know, if you're a little bit pissed off or anything, you can't try and stop the puck harder as a goalie. It's one of those things where you just have to relax and react to it, and, you know, just when things don't go your way off of bounces, off deflections, block shots and stuff, it's just battling after that. And as far as that goes, you know, I just felt relaxed out there tonight.
That's Michael Hutchinson last night. A word about Michael Hutchinson's performance and the controversy that surrounded it entering the game.
Yeah, and earlier, you know, Sean mentioned that there were so many storylines going into this game and throughout the game, and that has to be the biggest one, Drew. I mean, it's his first NHL start since last April, and you mentioned, I mean, he didn't make 40 saves here, but he made some key saves in key times, and he got the win. And for him, you know, coming into the game, you know, on short rest, really, he just played in the All-Star game, as we mentioned at the top of the segment, early Monday night. You know, it's a very impressive win for him. So, you know, give Michael Hutchinson a lot of credit here. And we don't know how long Steve Mason's going to be out of the lineup. I mean, Steve Mason could be out of the lineup here, guys, for 2, 3, 4 weeks. He could obviously be back in the same amount of time. But the point is,
two concussions in a short period of time doesn't usually spell a quick return.
Right. So, I mean, Michael Hutchinson could play another game on this homestand. He could play 2 or 3 more games on this homestand. So just really nice for him, you know, to get his first NHL win of the season in his first NHL start of the season.
Sean, a quick word. When are we going to see Michael Hutchinson in net for the Jets again? They don't have a back-to-back until the end of February. They have the Arizona Coyotes on Tuesday night, and all due respect to the Coyotes, they're not an upper echelon team in the NHL. But they're, in terms of workload, it's not a heavy workload for the Jets. There's no back-to-backs. You got a couple days off between a lot of these games. Is this Connor Hellebuck really for the next nine games of the homestand, or do you think Michael Hutchinson gets one of the next nine on the homestand?
I assume whoever the backup is will get at least one, maybe in the middle, break it up a little bit. But the way Connor Hellebuck is playing, the way his home record dictates, you have to assume, especially just looking at some of the competition, three games within the Central Division just alone, you assume he'll be getting the majority. If not, I'd say eight of the remaining nine, seven of the remaining nine.
The two softest
possibly games. Maybe Arizona, but they put him in against the Lightning. So if you're going to play him against the weaker teams, it's not really following the trend of the team thus far. But, maybe Florida? Eric Comrie didn't fare so well. Try that.
Your two weakest opponents in the next nine games of the homestand are the Coyotes on Tuesday night, 6 days from now, and then you have Florida a couple weeks after that. So maybe one of those games, but it'll be interesting to see what Paul Maurice decides to do. He's been riding Connor Hellebuck for the majority of the year, and at this point in time, the results speak for themselves. When we come back, we shift our attention to tomorrow night's contest against the West-leading Vegas Golden Knights. That being said, a victory for the Jets tomorrow night against the Golden Knights puts them tied in points with the team from Vegas. We talk about that next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Rolling off the boards now is Lindberg. He's taken to the ice, gave away the puck, and the Jets will start back again. A 3-on-2. Line A across the line. Line A in the high slot. Line A near side for Ehlers. Wrap around, he scores! Nikolai Ehlers with some great footwork. Kicked it from his skate to his stick. Ruled behind the net. The jam job makes it 5-2 Winnipeg.
The jam job.
It's the best.
By Nikolai Ehlers proved to be the game-winning goal against the Golden Knights. That was the first game the Golden Knights played here in Winnipeg back on the 1st of December. It was a 5-2 lead for the Jets at that point in time. It ended up being a 7-4 game, including an empty net goal by Kyle Connor. It certainly was a high-scoring affair the last time the Jets and the Golden Knights met at Bell MTS Place. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Golden Knights, their magical season just continues to... I'm speechless. I don't know if you guys saw what they did. Do you guys see what they did last night?
Yeah, it's
a 2-1 game.
There's got to be some sort of magic potion or like something supernatural going on.
In case any of our audience missed it, it's a 2-1 game for the Golden Knights. Pardon me, for the Flames in Calgary against the Golden Knights. This is a game that the Flames need more than the Golden Knights. The Flames currently outside of a playoff spot in the Pacific Division, albeit only by a point, but they need the win. They're up 2-1 on home ice against the Golden Knights. Michael Frolik goes to pass the puck back to TJ Brody. He misses Brody, or Brody turns. It's hard to decipher, really, in the video which one it was. It hits Mike Smith, who's not really expecting it, causes a big rebound, and Eric Halla jumps on it and gets his 18th of the season to tie the game with a minute 46 to go. 10 seconds later, off the faceoff, Jonathan Marchessault gets his 18th of the year, and all of a sudden, after being down 2-1 with a minute 46 to go, the Golden Knights have a 3-2 lead with a minute 36 to go in 10 seconds. They scored into the empty net, and that is how they won 4-2 over the Calgary Flames, a game that, sure, they may have tied the game in the last minute 46. That's not unusual. That's not unheard of. But the manner in which they tied the game and then won the game in regulation, I think, left the Calgary Flames completely shell-shocked and is just another chapter in the mythology that has been the Vegas Golden Knights this season.
Yeah, it almost is bordering on mythology, isn't it, Drew? And, you know, you mentioned Eric Halla, obviously former member of the Minnesota Wild. We saw him a lot here at Bell MTS Place playing for the division rival Wild. And, you know, 18 goals, that's a new career high. How many guys on this Golden Knights team are having career years? I mean, William Karlsson's having a career year. Eric Halla's having a career year. It seems like everybody's having a career year. And the Golden Knights just keep winning, guys. And, you know, the Jets, as you mentioned, Drew, at the top of the segment, you know, the Jets beat them 7-4 last time the Golden Knights were in town. But this team, you know, hasn't lost many games since then. And as you mentioned, you know, they're still first in the Pacific, first in the West, second overall in the NHL. Marc-Andre Fleury's back. Shea Theodore is playing full-time in the NHL now. I mean, there just isn't really any let-up in this team right now, and it's going to be a big test for the Jets. But as we've seen time and time again, the Jets get up for these games against the top team. So, of course, nobody expected the Golden Knights to be first in the West at the end of the month of January, but here we are, you know, with 2.5 months or so left in the season.
There's no reason why.
And they could get a home ice advantage throughout the playoffs.
Yeah, they're going to win the Pacific. They're 11 points up on the San Jose Sharks and the Los Angeles Kings in the Pacific Division.
Forget that. They could get the President's Trophy.
Absolutely.
The Jets could also get the President's Trophy.
Yeah, I mean,
it's wide open.
They're only a point behind the Tampa Bay Lightning now for number one overall in the NHL. And the Jets, of course, that means they're only 3 points behind the Lightning. They could get the President's Trophy. Marc-Andre Fleury, you mentioned him. It was a little ridiculous that he was named to the All-Star team. Given that he'd only played maybe a quarter of the games for the Golden Knights. But since his return from injury, 15 games played for the Golden Knights, a record of 10-3-2, a 1.59 goals against average that leads all goalies in the NHL since December 11th, and a .947 save percentage, which only trails Carter Hutton, who's played one game less. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury has been absolutely tremendous for the Golden Knights since his return from injury. So if you're looking for a reason why the Golden Knights continue to play as well as they do, in addition to guys having career offensive years, Marc-Andre Fleury looks like, not to say rejuvenated isn't the right word, because he was still pretty good in Pittsburgh. He just looks like an upper echelon, top flight NHL goaltender that, you know, every team that fancies themselves a Stanley Cup contender really truly needs.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Marc-Andre Fleury proving that he still has what it takes. And there was maybe some questions with regards to his abilities with Matt Murray kind of overtaking him with Pittsburgh and whether or not the Golden Knights would be getting the goaltender in which he led the Penguins to their respective cups. And it just shows you what a team can do when they have confidence in their goaltender. We've seen it here in Winnipeg for years, how having confidence in your goaltender can change the mentality of the way you approach games. And they were able to survive with with Max Legacy and Malcolm Subban, and
they went to they went five goaltenders deep there for a while.
Like, don't forget about Oscar Dansk.
Oscar Dansk.
I did forget about Oscar Dansk. Let's go. And it's unbelievable. And when you've got an all-star quality netminder, the team, it changes the mentality of the way you play in front of them. And the way Vegas plays, they're fast, they're intense, they're physical. It's a recipe for disaster for anyone that wants to play them in the playoffs.
And again, Sean, you keep thinking that this Golden Knights team is going to go on a losing streak, and they don't. They have six guys that are in double digits in scoring. Pardon me, seven guys that are double digits in scoring, led by Jonathan Marchessault, who you mentioned earlier, Drew. He had a career year last year with the Florida Panthers. But for me, William Karlsson is one of the greatest stories this team. I mean, William Karlsson was a relatively high draft pick, and you know, he could get 40 goals this year. He could put 40 goals easily into the net. He's already at 27 right now. He could get more than 40. And, you know, you go up and down the lineup, and I mean, you mentioned it starts in goal. Marc-Andre Fleury, as you mentioned, Drew, has been phenomenal in net for the Golden Knights after coming back from that injury. And, you know, it's a pretty solid defense, I think, led by Shea Theodore, who's the best defenseman. They're without Lucas Abiza right now, who had a good start to the season, more of a defensive defenseman. But they've got some toughness on the team with a guy like Derek Englund. Nate Schmidt is a very underrated defenseman. He had a good year last year for the Washington Capitals. I mean, this team just doesn't lose games consecutively. I mean, with the exception of, you know, a few small losing streaks, they just keep going and going and going, and they remain atop the division and the league.
Yeah, you know, my
they're second in the league, right. the conference.
Yeah, my concern for the Golden Knights, you know, when it comes to push comes to shove in the playoffs, where goals are harder to come by and you might need some unexpected goal scoring, is that I don't know that their bottom six is going to be good enough to get them that goal when they truly need it. You look at their bottom six, and after you get past Marchessault and Carlson and Perron and Riley Smith and Eric Halla and James Neal, the goal scoring is sort of dries up a little bit there. And, you know, guys like Cody Eakin. I mean, Cody Eakin has not had a very good year in Vegas, coming over from Dallas. You know, there's guys there that are playing probably more than you would expect them to play, and I wonder if that might end up costing them when push comes to shove and the games get a little tighter come playoff time. Would you have concerns about their bottom six?
I think you could say that about a lot of teams, but, I mean, let's be honest, Drew, nobody expected them to be a top five offensive team in the league, right?
No, definitely.
I mean,
not.
Nobody saw William Karlsson on pace for 40 goals. I mean, find me one person that thought he would be at the top of the NHL list of top goal scorers.
I promise you, Jarmo Kekalainen, when he traded him to Vegas, or traded him as part of the deal so that they would not take, I can't remember even who the specific player was off the Blue Jackets roster, didn't think that William Karlsson was going to get 40 goals this year.
Right, and James Neal, you know, is a multiple-time 20-goal scorer, so you expected James Neal, you know, to have a lot of goals, but, I mean, sure, I mean, the bottom six, I mean, Cody Eakin, let's be honest, I mean, he's not a natural goal scorer. He's got 6 goals this year, but he's not a guy that you expected to score 20 goals. But yeah, if you compare, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights bottom six, Drew, to Nashville mm-hmm. or Winnipeg, sure, Nashville and Winnipeg's bottom six is better. But I mean, right now you just have so many players exceeding expectations.
It's a great story.
It almost, you know, defies logic.
Yeah, logic in the Vegas Golden Knights went out the window a long, long time ago, as they've been on this magical run this season. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Dan Duva. He's the Vegas Golden Knights radio broadcaster. We'll talk more about the Jets' opponent tomorrow night in the Clash of the Titans that'll take place at Bell MTS Place. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. It's hashtag Bell Let's Talk Day. Keep using that hashtag all the way up until 12 midnight tonight, and you're raising great funds for mental health and mental health causes throughout the country of Canada. Even use it after today. It's one of those hashtags that's synonymous with mental health and the fight for mental health awareness. You can use it any day of the year. It's hashtag Bell Let's Talk Day. You're listening to NHL This Week. Drew Mundell, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Dan Duva. Dan is the Vegas Golden Knights radio broadcaster. Dan, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
So, how's it going?
Doing great, Dan. How are you doing? How's your heart after that comeback victory by the Golden Knights last night?
Well, you know, there in Calgary, the radio booth is almost hanging over the ice. I'm just lucky that my momentum didn't carry me out the window and tumbling into the crowd, because you can imagine it was eye-popping. You don't see too many things like that happen at any level, let alone among two playoff teams, and at the time Calgary was a playoff team, no longer. But that's the sort of breakdown that happens so rarely. It was really one of those moments you couldn't believe what you were watching.
You can say that almost about the entire Golden Knights season. It's just another fascinating chapter last night. With what, you know, you watch the highlights and it's just remarkable. Michael Frolik misses TJ Brody. Mike Smith's not expecting it. Eric Hall is standing right there, and then it's almost like the Flames were shell-shocked, because 10 seconds later, Marchessault walks right in and beats Mike Smith top corner short side, and all of a sudden what seemed like it could very well be a key Flames victory turns into yet another chapter in the Golden Knights fable this season.
And it's really an aberration for the Flames, and you look over the last couple of seasons, especially with Glenn Gullitson as the head coach there. Going into the game, they were 50-0-3 when leading after two periods.
Wow.
Let me say that again. They were 50-0-3 when leading after two periods over the last two seasons. And they went from having a 2-1 lead to a 3-2 regulation loss in less than a minute. So it's not something that the Calgary folks have endured very often. They are only 500 at home, and the Bluebirds came out for the Flames fans afterwards. It's a team that has had some really great moments, and you see that they've maybe turned a corner. They had won seven straight, but then they have that kind of a breakdown. So I wasn't surprised to hear the reaction from the crowd. That's what you'd expect. But for the Golden Knights, the Magic, they seem to have a bottomless well of that stuff, whatever it is. And whether it's the good fortune of the puck coming on goal right from a leak stick, and then how in the position to follow it up. Marchessault has a terrific shot to put Vegas in the lead, and then the empty netter. And really, the Golden Knights had been out of kilter, I thought, the last couple of games. Vegas had lost 2-1 against the Islanders the last game before the break. And all season, they have not had consecutive games where they were held to one goal or less. So you were waiting and waiting for the offense to just click into gear. I didn't think it would take until the 58th minute of the game to happen, but it finally did, because they have the third-best offense in the league. It's very rare that they're limited for an entire contest. They often come to you in the beginning of the game, punch in the teeth, and roll from there. They also have come from behind and had some moments like this. You know, there were 2.3 seconds left, and they beat Tampa Bay, that thrilling game. But this was really something, to be down by a goal and end up winning by two in just the last couple of minutes.
Dan, I know we've asked you about William Karlsson already this year, but we were talking about him last segment. And, you know, forget the fact that he's leading the Golden Knights in goal scoring. He might end up winning the Rocket Richard Trophy this year, former second-round pick of the Anaheim Ducks. What is William Karlsson eating for breakfast?
If I knew, I would have some myself. I think the thing that has impressed me most about him is his vision and his awareness. He's putting himself in such a great position to score the goals, but also defend opposing goal scorers. He's not just putting up these numbers and the recipient of, just hanging out in front of the goal and tipping in easy ones. He's doing so much at both ends of the ice. He's got an awareness that you don't often see. The case in point to me was a couple of games back, Shea Theodore makes this brilliant stretch pass. And William Karlsson has got to know that Theodore would see him and know where the defenders are going to be. You don't see that kind of a play too often. And it took two ends of that play where, you know, Theodore had to see it too. But Karlsson is just so aware of what he sees when he doesn't have the puck. I've said this a couple of times on the broadcast for the folks in Vegas who are maybe getting to know the sport a little bit. Oftentimes, their eyes just follow the puck. Who's got the puck? Who's skating with it? Who's passing it? Who's shooting it? But if you just watch William Karlsson, even when he doesn't have the puck, you'll learn a lot about the game, because he just has a sense of where to be and what's going to happen next.
Dan, it's fair to say that if me and you were talking a little hockey before the season started, we would both assume that the Winnipeg Jets and the Vegas Golden Knights would be playing for a top spot in the West come February 1st.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I'm on board with that, right. You know, I think that the way things have unfolded here, it's kind of hard to have projected any of this. But, the expectations, you know, before the season, there are all sorts of the preseason predictions. And the conversation, of course, has been about the expansion rules, and perhaps they were more generous than previous expansions. That's absolutely true. But even with that, everybody still was picking Vegas to be last or near the bottom. Very few people thought they'd be competitive, let alone a division or conference leader. Now the conversations with, you know, maybe Seattle coming along, and the rules have to be tougher for Seattle. But what's wrong with having an expansion team do really well? Wouldn't the NHL want a brand new franchise to succeed early on? It's good for the game. Doesn't make some of the other longer tenured franchises very happy, I suppose. Here's a great organization that's put things together in a surprising way. Scott Burnside, who I love, he's covered the Dallas Stars now. in his preseason rankings for the Golden Knights, and he had Vegas at 31 out of 31 teams. And one of the reasons was they're not going to be very strong down the middle. Now, William Karlsson's got 27 goals. Eric Howe is about as reliable as anybody. Even with Pierre-Édouard Bellemare on the fourth line, he's been just rock solid in that role, reliable locker room guy. So the surprises are numerous. It's hard to keep track of all of them. But when you have a showdown like Vegas has had, a few of them, you know, with Pittsburgh earlier this year with Fleury going up against his old club, and they'll see Pittsburgh on the road in a few days. But going up against Nashville, going up against the Tampa Bay Lightning, and obviously the Winnipeg Jets is another team right in the midst of this, because you're looking down the stretch. I mean, we're now much closer to the end than we are to the beginning. This could be a fun run here in the last 35 games.
No doubt it will be. Dan Duva is our guest on NHL This Week. Dan is the radio broadcaster for the Vegas Golden Knights. Dan, we're less than a month away from the trade deadline. You know, to everyone's surprise, it appears as though the Golden Knights should be buyers. I mean, they're, you know, atop the Western Conference. They're almost atop the entire NHL in standings. I look at the bottom six of the Golden Knights, and that's what gives me pause, you know, going into the playoffs stretch drive where goals are usually harder to come by. Is that an area that you think the Golden Knights might be looking to upgrade come the trade deadline?
Yeah, I'd have to think that would be it, with a couple of caveats. First off, are the defensemen going to be healthy right now? Mm-hmm. You've got Lucas Spezza and John Merrill unavailable because of injury. They're on IR. Braden McNabb is also out. He's not on injured reserve. He's day-to-day and is with the team, but it's not 100% certain when he'll get back in. Good news is they've got Jason Garrison as kind of the last option. He's been in the American League most of the year. So Garrison has played the last couple with McNabb out. So we'll see if the health holds up long enough, but there is some depth on defense. In terms of the third, fourth line roles, I think that the fourth line has been really terrific with Bellemare and Carrier. I think that it's a matter of time before William Carrier finds that finishing touch. He's created some opportunities recently. He draws penalties. That first goal that Vegas scored in Calgary yesterday, it was the result of William Carrier drawing a penalty at Vegas and capitalizing on a power play. Vegas's power play is six for its last 11. So you had Tomáš Nosek, who is now out with an injury. He'd been the other winger on the fourth line. It's the third line where you think they're just waiting to break out. Alex Tuck has had some great moments this year. Cody Eakin's the center. Brendan Leipzig has been the other winger. And, of course, you know, when you talk about Cody Eakin and Brendan Leipzig, you know, there's a lot of conversation to be had with those guys, of course. And it's just you wonder, is there enough of a finisher to really come up with more production? They've had their moments. But I suppose that if they're, I mean, you're not going to touch the other two lines, obviously Perron and Howa and Neal, and then the other line, Marchessault and Karlsson and Smith, those are locked in. It would be those, is there a spot there? Who might be the piece to upgrade with? I don't know, but I guess there's a few weeks, and I wonder if Tomáš Nosek is able to come back soon. He had that shoulder injury back a couple weeks in Nashville. So we'll see what the health is there. And if there might be a move to be made, but if there is one to be made, I'd have to think you're probably right. It's just kind of hard to think about that given how much balance there has been in the time on ice. There is so much success with those two lines. Even though they're not producing a ton, they are so reliable defensively. And Gerard Gallant has trust in all four lines. You see it in the minutes. So you wonder, you don't want to toy with something that is doing pretty well, but at the same time, if you can try to add a finisher in there someplace, it would be hard to pass up.
Dan, you mentioned Jason Garrison earlier. He hasn't played a lot of hockey this year. They recently recalled him from the American Hockey League. How has he looked in his first couple of games back into the lineup?
You know, I tell you, it looks like he hasn't missed a beat. He's going to do what he does, which is not necessarily what you'd get out of, you know, a Braden McNabb, who's, you know, not that McNabb is fleet of foot, but McNabb has that long reach. You know, there's a reason why McNabb got a four-year contract extension while Garrison found himself in the American Hockey League. That's not to disparage Garrison. You know, then you think about, you know, what Jason has done part of the Tampa Bay Lightning the last few years, all the success that happened there. And sometimes you're a victim of your contract as a player who's been around. I mean, he's 33 years old now. So I think that he's just what you'd expect. He's not going to do anything too flashy. There's a little bit of an adjustment. I've asked him that question, how do you feel in stepping back in? And he's such a pro. I mean, he's just a positive influence on the rest of the group. He's got all the experience you can imagine. Frankly, it's a luxury that most organizations cannot just dip into the minor league system and find a defenseman with the experience at the NHL level that Jason Garrison has. So I think he's been just fine. They haven't needed him to do anything more than what Jason Garrison has always done, just a reliable guy that's good in the room. So I think that they would, of course, prefer to have Braden McNabb back in there or even Lucas Pisa, but we'll see how those injuries last. But Jason Garrison's a terrific guy to have as eighth, ninth defenseman.
Dan, just in the limited opportunities I've had to watch Vegas, you know, they're a fast team, they're big, they play hard, you know, they limit time and space. Perfect style, let's say, for playoffs. But Paul Maurice said something really interesting today when he was asked about the Golden Knights. He said that their hand skills are extremely underrated, and they possess a lot more skill than people give them credit for. Do you see that more so on a day-to-day basis, just watching this team on the regular?
Yeah, and I suppose I get spoiled watching it all the time because it is such an attribute for this club, up and down the lineup, too. I mentioned Braden McNabb a moment ago, and when you talk about that particular skill, you'd think, okay, Jonathan Marchessault, sure, and the shot that he had to score the go-ahead goal, no doubt about it. I mean, that was a remarkable shot. His hands are so impressive. But just the stick work, even in the defensive zone, I mean, just little things. Like Brad Hunt made a great stick play at the side of the net. Nate Schmidt on a breakaway with Goudreau the other day. It is impressive, and it's not always in the situations you'd imagine where it's the slick offensive setup. Frankly, I think that they've looked kind of off-kilter the last couple of games offensively, but they've still managed to quick stick, and that defensive zone play, it's not just the speed of the guys mentioned, Shea Theodore and Nate Schmidt, and these are some of the faster defenders that you're going to see. But they get into good position, and, you know, give a lot of credit to the staff. I mean, Ryan McGill has been working very carefully and diligently with guys individually. It's an impressive thing to watch. We don't hear too much about assistant coaches, but there is so much experience on this staff. Gerard Gallant, of course, at the head of the pack. But, when you see the day-to-day work on the ice, the practices, the morning skates, and the individual attention, Mike Kelly as well, and David Pryor, the goalie coach. It's really impressive to see, we talk about the character of the players on this team. The character of the coaches is outstanding, too. And I think that when you put an emphasis on a certain aspect of the game and you drive it home, it ends up affecting the whole club. So I think it's a great observation. I agree with Maurice. And like I said, I think that Vegas fans get spoiled to an extent because it has been up and down the lineup a consistent part of the game.
Dan Duva is the Vegas Golden Knights radio broadcaster. The Golden Knights and the Jets tomorrow evening, a battle of the two best teams in the Western Conference at Bell MTS Place. Dan, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy Winnipeg tonight, and we'll see you at the rink tomorrow.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks, as always.
Take care, Dan. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss the impact of the Jacob Trouba injury. Dmitry Kulikov sounds like he's close to returning to the lineup, and a potential trade target for the Winnipeg Jets. Much more to come. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast,
on TSN 1290.ca.
Big thank you to Dan Duva, Vegas Golden Knights broadcaster, for joining us. Great insight into the Jets' opponent tomorrow night, that, of course, being the Golden Knights. Should be a fun night at the Old Barn in downtown Winnipeg. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, and proud participant in the upcoming Le Poutine Week. I believe that starts tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. Bernstein's Deli is located in the Cordon Village Mall and has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're curious about the Bernstein's Deli Le Poutine Week entry, you can head back to Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and you can listen to the sound of a lion eating a gazelle or Ezzy eating poutine. Basically, it's the same sound. And you can get excited for tomorrow and the debut of the Bernstein's Deli Poutine Week entry.
Yeah, you're going to want to head down to Bernstein's this week, guys. The poutine is unbelievable. So
and
don't
get there
walk.
Before Ezzy does, because he might eat all of it on
like
his own.
Brisket and cut up latkes? Like,
yeah.
Is that what it,
yeah. Potato latke, brisket, gravy, bone marrow gravy. Is that it? I think something like that. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds luxurious.
Yeah, and Ezzy can attest to that. Let's get into the Jacob Trouba injury for the Winnipeg Jets. The right side defenseman for the Jets out 6 to 8 weeks with an ankle injury happened in Anaheim right before the All-Star break. I mean, this is the one area I would suggest the Jets have the depth in which to withstand this injury, but it's still a big loss for the Jets to lose a guy who had been your shutdown right side defenseman for the next 2 months.
Yeah, of course it is. And, you know, Jacob Trouba has been paired up with Josh Morrissey for most of the year. That's your shutdown pair. And Tyler Myers steps in for Jacob Trouba on that top pair to be the Jets' new shutdown pair. And, you know, it's poor timing for the Jets here. You know, Mark Scheifele is going to come back into the lineup here in the next week to 2 weeks. But when you're talking about Jacob Trouba, I thought he had an excellent road trip for the Jets prior to the All-Star break. So it's really unfortunate that they're going to lose Trouba. But, you know, that means that other players on this team are going to have the opportunity. So you're talking about Tucker Poolman, who's now going to have an opportunity to play a regular role for the Jets. I thought he looked pretty good out there last night for the Jets, but you're never going to replace Trouba with another player on your roster. I mean, you just aren't.
Yeah, you just don't have players of that caliber just sitting around.
The minutes he eats up is just impressive in itself.
Yeah, and you know, the Jets last night, I mean, so what you're going to have is you're going to have Byfuglien Myers playing more minutes. Byfuglien played 25-16, Myers 24-55. Those aren't unreasonable numbers for guys of their ilk and of their quality. You know, Byfuglien, you don't want to see him up at the 27, 28, 29-minute mark, but 24-55, 25 minutes for Byfuglien isn't unreasonable, Ezzy. I think that's probably where Byfuglien would prefer to be on a nightly basis than where he had been earlier in the season.
Well, he played more than any other player in the league last year. So, I mean, he's used to playing those big minutes. But there aren't that many defensemen in the NHL that play 26, 27, 28 minutes on a regular basis. So, of course, you don't want him necessarily to be playing that much. And Tyler Myers, you know, prior to last year, led all Jets players in ice time. He's used to playing those big minutes. But you're right. I mean, it's going to be Myers and Byfuglien sharing those minutes. And ideally, if you've got, you know, Tucker Poolman in the lineup, he'll be playing somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 12 to 14 minutes. And we expect Dmitry Kulikov to be back in the lineup tomorrow night versus Vegas. So he's most likely going to be, I would expect, your second pairing defenseman on the left side. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Toby Enstrom, because Toby Enstrom and Buff obviously have that familiarity going back to the Atlanta Thrashers days. But you wonder if they go back to Dmitry Kulikov and Dustin Byfuglien, because Dmitry Kulikov is that kind of stay-at-home, reliable defenseman. We know that Buff likes to jump up into the play. Kulikov's not a guy that jumps up into the play too much, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. So I would expect, you know, Maurice to look at pairing up Kulikov and Buff together.
They also did skate together at today's practice.
Yeah, an interesting comment today from Elliot Friedman in his 31 Thoughts, and I'll read it verbatim. Quote, also interesting, another team that's interesting is the Winnipeg Jets. They are a legit contender, fighting through injuries to Mark Scheifele and Jacob Trouba. One thing I think they are considering, is there a left-shot defenseman out there who can make them better? And by better, that's someone who deserves to play ahead of Tobias Enstrom, Dmitry Kulikov, and or Josh Morrissey. Is there an option out there? Question mark, close quote. Surprised to me that that would be an area that the Jets would be looking to improve upon. I mean, sure, you can argue that you might want to improve on Toby Enstrom, who is, you know, certainly not what he was earlier in his career. But from my perspective, that I didn't expect the Jets to be in the market for a left side defenseman, as they are, at least according to Elliot Friedman, or at least considering the option.
Yeah, and I mean, it's obviously going to be a second pairing or third pairing defenseman, but for me, I mean, Dmitry Kulikov, if he's healthy, is your second pairing defenseman on the left side. So it's all speculation at this point, Drew, right? So for me, I mean, they don't need to make a move. I've said that repeatedly on the show. I don't think the Jets necessarily need to bring in a top six forward or a top four defenseman. For me, it would most likely be a bottom three forward or a bottom pairing defenseman. But we'll see what happens, because the Jets definitely have the pieces to move. But they're definitely stronger on the right side. Mm-hmm. And you see that when a guy like Jacob Trouba goes out of the lineup. Tucker Poolman, you know, he might be a rookie, but he's a 24-year-old man. So I think Tucker Poolman is sometimes underrated in this organization. I mean, it's his first year in the league, but he comes in yesterday and, you know, they don't miss a beat. So for me, I agree that they would be looking on the left side. But, you know, as far as who they would be acquiring.
I'm not asking you for who.
I mean,
I know it's rank speculation if you're just starting to pluck names off of a board.
And for me, it makes more sense for them to go after a depth defenseman. But you know, only Chevy knows the answer to that, whether or not they go after a quote unquote top four guy.
And it's just interesting moving forward here, just with this homestand with the banged up defense. That it's helpful that Paul Maurice can control the matchups, kind of shelter Tucker Poolman and Ben Chiarot from some of the. I don't want to say mismatches, but I'll say mismatches.
If this game was in Tampa last night, you would have seen Kucherov, Stamkos, and Namestnikov get some opportunities against Poolman and Chiarot.
Yeah, so January, limited games with regards to the break, so that was kind of helpful with regards to injury, and now we have this 10-game homestand. So another kind of benefit to the Jets lineup that's diminished by injury right now.
When we come back, Jim Cerny joins us. He covers the NHL. He's the editor for the Sporting News. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia on online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Sporting News, we're pleased to welcome back to the program a good friend of ours, Jim Cerny. Jim, good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, how's it going? Hope you're having a great night.
We are, Jim, and hope you are having a great night as well.
Yeah, we got some Winnipeg weather out here in New York.
Oh, I bet you don't have it that bad.
Yeah, a little exaggerated.
Yeah, sorry, that was a bit of an evil laugh on my part. I apologize for that.
Yeah.
Jim, obviously brought you on. We'll talk about some of the New York-based NHL teams in the Metropolitan Division, maybe look at the league in its entirety. But right now you look at the Islanders and the Rangers, and they're both a point out of the playoffs in the ultra-competitive Eastern Conference and Metropolitan Division. They're a point behind the Philadelphia Flyers, who hold that last spot, with the Flyers having a game in hand on the Rangers and two in hand on the Islanders. What do you think the Rangers and the Islanders are doing plans-wise as they approach the upcoming trade deadline? I mean, the Rangers don't seem to be a Stanley Cup contender. They have some key unrestricted free agents at season's end. And then the Islanders, they also don't seem to be a Stanley Cup contender, but they have the guy named John Tavares who's looking for some sort of sign as to which direction this franchise is going to go. How do you think the Rangers and Islanders are going to handle the next month?
Well, I'm most intrigued by what the Rangers do or don't do, in part because I think management might err on the side of, you know what, we've got some of these unrestricted free agents here. Maybe it's time to move a Rick Nash, maybe even a Michael Grabner, who leads the team in goals. Nick Holden, one of their defensemen, is an unrestricted free agent, because I don't know that they've got what it takes to really make a deep run in the playoffs. They certainly have not showed any consistency in their game that lends you to believe that over, a 6-8 week stretch in the spring that they could make a deep run, except for one factor, and that's Henrik Lundqvist. And Lundqvist has played far superior than he did a year ago. In fact, probably he's having his best season in any of his last few now. It's been very, very consistent. And to be honest, without him, the Rangers would be much farther behind than they are right now. So in a way, do you owe it to Henrik, and do you owe it to yourself to see, well, geez, maybe we should do something here at the deadline and try and make ourselves better as opposed to getting rid of guys. Do we try and add somebody here, maybe a missing ingredient? Because, boy, this might be our last whack at it with Henrik, who's going to be 36 come March. So it's going to be really intriguing to see which way they go in their decision-making here. You know, I do believe that in the bigger picture, I think you are going to start to see a bigger overhaul. I would not be surprised if over the summer Matt Zuccarello gets moved. He would be a free agent in 2019. And I think they would entertain moving Ryan McDonagh, their captain, as well. I think that's the point that they would be at. But I think it's a real tug right now to decide what do we do this year, because Henrik is playing this well, and this may be the last really big whack at it we have with him, you know, as our goaltender. And then, you know, with the Islanders, it's a different situation. You have, you know, a bit of a younger team, and you mentioned John Tavares. Yeah, you know, he's looking for signs every day, whether it be about the new arena or whether it be about the team's commitment to winning or, you know, whatever the case might be. He's looking for signs. He's looking for reasons to stay. His heart, I think, is with the Islanders. I think he wants to stay a New York Islander, but he hasn't signed yet. You know, he hasn't agreed to any contract extension. And July 1, you know, every day that goes by, you're another day closer to his, you know, UFA status. So that's one reason why I think the Islanders are going to do something at the deadline. But I also believe that they have the assets. They have a lot of assets. They have draft picks. They have younger players that teams are interested in. So I think the Islanders are in a good place to make a move at the deadline or a couple moves at the deadline. Most notably, I think that they need to shore up the defense, especially with Calvin DeHaan out for the rest of the season. So I think that's the way that they're going to go. I think I'd be more ready to say that the Islanders will be looking to make a deal or two at the deadline than, you know, the Rangers right now. I kind of almost shrug and I say, I don't know. They could go either way. And I also believe that the Rangers might be thinking that they're aces in the hole for, you know, hey, maybe we can get a spark by calling up one or both of our first-round picks this past year, because both Elias Anderson and Philip Hedel are now playing in the minor leagues, and both are playing very well. I think that they're part of the plan before the season's over. So that would be two young but also fresh bodies that would be coming in that might add a little jolt to them around the deadline or before or even after.
Jim, sticking with the Islanders, on Monday the Islanders announced that over the next 3 years they're going to be returning part-time to the renovated Nassau Coliseum. And I know as a former play-by-play voice of the Islanders, you're very familiar with Nassau Coliseum. Is the biggest winner here with this announcement the fans?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, almost the way you could argue the players too, even though I know, you know, the facility is not as fancy as, you know, other facilities are in the NHL, and certainly won't be as fancy as their new Belmont Park arena is going to be in a few years once that gets built. And you know, even not as nice as Barclays, where they're playing now in Brooklyn. But, you know, there's something about that barn, that atmosphere, especially when the team's playing well and come playoff time. I mean, you know, they nearly tore down the place, you know, a couple years ago when they were in the playoffs, the Islanders. Those fans just almost blew the roof off the building. So there's a special vibe there. The but, though, is, you know, now they're going to have to sink more money into the Coliseum. They did a refurbishing for it, but they downsized the arena. They actually took seats out of it after the Islanders left as part of the refurbishing. Now you're going to have to build it back up again, and, you know, you're going to have to get, you know, the ice-making system and the ice-cooling system and all that, the humidifiers, you know, all this has to get back up to speed again. So, you know, it's going to cost a lot of money, but Yeah, it's circling back to where you started. The big winners are the fans because, you know, those fans on the island, they just never wanted that team to leave the island and head more into the city or anywhere else. So, you know, I think they're going to be welcomed back, you know, with big open arms. It's 12 games next year, 12 home games at the Coliseum next year, the rest at Barclays. And then the year after, they're going to split them half and half. At Barclays in the Coliseum. So, yes, but it's going to be a little confusing. You know, it's Tuesday. Are they on Long Island or are they in Brooklyn? And my ticket for Saturday, which building am I going to? So, yeah, there are going to be people that are going to be unhappy with this as well because there's going to be confusion. But, yeah, I think overall, I think more fans are going to be happy than not.
Jim, just looking at the stats and the numbers of the Islanders right now, you know, John Tavares leading the team, no surprise there. Josh Bailey, Anders Lee having remarkable seasons. Don't even get me started on Matthew Barzal. The kid is a phenom. But what I'm just curious is your thoughts about what Jordan Eberle has been able to do with his new club, especially coming out at the beginning of the season, talking about, you know, how the media kind of shattered his confidence and how he lost, like, the fun was kind of gone out of the game. What are your thoughts on the former Edmonton Oiler and what he's been able to do?
Yeah, I think he's fit in really well there. I mean, this is a good offensive team. You know, they can skate with pretty much any team in the league. They can generate, you know, scoring chances and finish pretty much with any team in the league. They're one of the better offenses in the NHL. They're fun to watch from that point of view. And I think Eberle fits in great, and I think he has fit in great right from the get-go. You know, I think we all thought we were going to see more of Eberle with John Tavares this season. You know, dating back to their, you know, to the World Juniors and all, but, you know, it hasn't worked out that way. It's been, you know, Tavares, Lee, and Bailey have been aligned pretty much all year, except when Josh Bailey was hurt. And it's been a formidable line, you know, one of the better ones in the NHL. But that's almost, that's actually a good thing, I think, for Josh Bailey. Of course, he'd love to play with John Tavares. But, you know, now he's on his second line. Now he's more of a, you know, he helps bolster the scoring depth, if you will, instead of having to be a top-line guy. And I think he's fit into that role really well. And Matt Barzal talks about Jordan Eberle all the time, about what a terrific influence he's been on and off the ice. You know, they have a great chemistry together as line mates. And, you know, when Eberle's, you know, a little bit more older, a little bit more of that veteran, and apparently is really good with the kid off the ice and has really helped him, you know, fit in this year and kind of taken him a little bit under his wing. So, you know, I think in all aspects, I think this has been a very, very good transition for Jordan Eberle. And you know what, maybe getting out from underneath the, you know, the constant trade rumors and, you know, the constant, you know, the big microscope that he was under in Edmonton, I think has freed him up too, just let him relax a little bit. You know, so I think it's been a really good fit. I think it was a really good trade. And, you know, certainly, you know, from afar, the Islanders look at it and say, you know, certainly they got the better end of the deal, as Ryan Strome certainly has not been nearly as productive or as good a fit in Edmonton as Eberle has been with the Islanders.
Jim Cerny covers the Rangers, the Islanders, and the NHL for Sporting News. Jim, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Yeah, you got it. You guys have a great night.
Likewise, Jim. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
When we come back, we shift our focus to hashtag Bell Let's Talk. Spend the next 15 or so minutes talking about the fight for mental health awareness and the fight to better everyone's mental health. That's coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Today is an important day on the calendar. It's Bell Let's Talk Day, and this is a important day every single year since Bell began this important initiative. It's to bring awareness to the struggles and to the battles regarding mental health that many people that you may not even know about have, you know, on a day-by-day basis. And it's getting the battle of mental health and mental health awareness out of the shadows and into the limelight so that people all over the world know that they have people here for them. They can reach out. They can take it out of the darkness into the light, that being the battle for mental health awareness. Here in Winnipeg, Rick Rippon was unfortunately not able to get out of the darkness, and we know the tragic story of Rick Rippon. And since his passing, the True North organization, Craig Heisinger, has try to not have Rick's passing go in vain. And as a result, they've started what is called the Project 11 organization. And today at Burton Cummings Theater, about 3,000 kids came to hear about Project 11 at what they called the Project 11 Mental Wellness Summit, a day-long event as part of Bell Let's Talk Day. A couple years ago now, in conjunction with Bell Let's Talk, the Believe in Rip documentary feature premiered on a Winnipeg Jets broadcast. We thought, given that today is Bell Let's Talk Day, it's an important feature to go back to hearing. So we're going to air for you the Believe in Rip feature, and then we'll talk on the other end just about why this day and why the battle for mental health awareness is just so important. Here is Believe in Rip.
As long as Rick was alive and playing for either Vancouver or Manitoba, I never turned my phone off at night, ever. If my phone rang or buzzed at 2 or 3 in the morning, there's not one person in my family that didn't know what was going on. They'd hear me talking downstairs from 2 in the morning till 5 in the morning. That was just something you did to make sure that you were there for him. I can remember going home the night of August 15th, 2011 and putting my phone in the same place, but I turned it off. Not sure why I did, but I did. And it wasn't on purpose, but obviously it wasn't going to ring.
This diminutive force of nature is Craig Heisinger, known to his friends simply as Zinger. The Winnipeg Jets executive visits countless local schools annually, all in the name of his good friend, Rick Rippon.
I speak at all kinds of schools. Started actually representing the Vancouver Canucks, and to now have our own program, Project 11, which was something that was near and dear to Rick's heart, is a real pleasure.
Unheralded and often underestimated, Rick Rippon played without fear.
Moose get it. Rippon will dive it on his stick and clear it to center ice.
He split 7 undaunted seasons between the Vancouver Canucks and their AHL affiliate, the Manitoba Moose.
Well, I think he was the smaller guy that could. He was the kind of guy that made you hope for him, you know.
Pound for pound, maybe the toughest kid I ever watched play. But it was combined with an honesty and a humility. Sometimes what's lacking in this game is the way Rick played it.
Rippon caught Heisinger's eye in 2005 while playing his final junior year in Regina. He was undrafted and had no plans to play professionally.
Zinger saw something in him, and he was right. And I think that really resonated with Rick.
Zinger offered Rippon an opportunity with the Moose, leading to an unlikely bond between GM and player.
Oh gosh, Zinger's name came up fairly early and was always part of Rick's conversation.
They were just so much alike in so many ways, and they knew it. There was a love for one another, there's no doubt about that. Their paths were different, were really, really similar. Rip being overlooked in the draft and Zinger starting off as an equipment manager.
Rippon was eventually called up to the Canucks, scoring in his first NHL game.
Back for Jovanovski, a shot, first puck, and back to score! Rippon, his first National Hockey League goal!
We were watching, and he scored, and it's like, holy, it was kind of surreal.
Now gets it in front, side score!
On the surface, he was living a dream. But under that surface, Rippon was battling depression.
There got to be a lot of ups and downs in Vancouver, a lot of times away from the team, a couple of rehab stints for mental health.
And when Rippon needed to talk, he reached out for Heisinger, often two time zones away.
For years, Zinger was literally his lifeline.
The phone was always on. He knew that. We're there for you day and night, and don't hesitate to call. And we'd honestly be disappointed if something would have happened and he didn't call.
In the summer of 2011, the Atlanta Thrashers relocated to Winnipeg. Heisinger was named assistant GM of the team, and one of his first moves was signing Rick Rippon.
I remember he had that big shitty grin on his face there, like he was just so happy to be back in Winnipeg and the ability to be able to play hockey.
Okay, Rick, you're on. One last shot.
He was only here for 27 years. His life was way too short. He had support from family and friends, and he had professional help. But in the end, his problems were too much.
When kids looked at it at that very time, especially my kids, like, they just couldn't understand how Rick could come to that decision on August 15, 2011, to take his own life. Here was a guy that was making close to $1 million a year playing in the NHL. How much better can it get? I mean, Rick always spoke about trying to, once he had his situation under control, about trying to speak out and help other people. And at the end of the day, I hope something like this comes out of this. I guess I'm having trouble trying to see how it will.
Project 11 is a mental health initiative that the Winnipeg Jets True North Foundation has taken on in honor of Rick. We have been going into schools, working with grades 5 to 8 students, and teaching them different coping strategies.
It's about helping kids, and that's something that Rick would endorse 100%. If there was a program like it available when he was in school, I think things could have been a lot different.
He played through everything. He loved kids. Didn't have any of his own, but he loved kids. I'd do anything to help anybody here. I don't know you that good, but Rick would be here to help you, so I feel obligated. This Project 11, at the end of the day, is all about him. He wanted to get his message out. He wanted his experiences to be able to help young people. You guys are the perfect demographic of who he wanted to help. Thank you.
Kudos to Craig Heisinger, Sarah Orleski. That Believe in Rip feature was from a couple years ago, but it still certainly holds water today on Bell Let's Talk Day. The fight for mental health, the fight for mental health awareness continues. It's one that we're proud to be a part of here at TSN 1290 as part of the Bell family. And really, it's one of those, it's an initiative, I think, that's been embraced right across the country of Canada and North America.
Yeah, Bell Let's Talk is always a great day. And, you know, you got to give True North tons of kudos for the job they've done with Project 11. You mentioned today, Drew, Nikolai Ehlers and Brian Little were out there for the summit, and it's a program that's actually traveled across many schools. My sister's a teacher in the North End, and her class was involved with Project 11. So True North has done an admirable job honoring Rick Rippon. He left us way too early, and you know, on a day like today, you know, it's about, you know, trying to end the stigma around mental illness, mm-hmm. but it's also about remembering those who, you know, didn't get through it and lost their lives. So unfortunately, Rick you know, left us way too early, but True North continues to keep his memory alive.
Yeah, you used the word that I was planning to say, you know, just it's all about breaking down the stigma, and people who suffer through depression and anxiety and all these mental health issues just have to be aware that they're not alone and help is out there, and it doesn't make you a weak person to go out and seek that help. And great on professional athletes for coming forward, you know, the machoist of the macho, and just telling those in need that it's okay to get help, and it doesn't make you a weak person.
Absolutely right, Sean. Sick, not weak, exactly. As Michael Landsberg always tweets and talks about. There's a couple other great features on the TSN.ca website. The interview that Darren Dreger did with Paul Ranger, who fought through mental health issues, and Darren Dreger and Mike Babcock also speak to how mental health is not a taboo topic in the Leafs dressing room. So some great features available on TSN.ca, and we also recommend, again, remind you, if you're looking to reach out to somebody, if you feel the need to talk to someone, Kids Help Phone is available, 1-800-668-6868. The Canadian Mental Health Association here in Winnipeg, 982-6100. And Clinic Community Health, 1-877-HELP-170. Ezzy, kudos to you. You made a donation earlier today. You got 300 retweets for your tweet about mental health awareness. You're going to make a donation, so kudos to you for that as well. Much more to come. It's hard to segue away from a topic like this back to the NHL, but when we come back, we'll be joined by Chris Mason to talk about the Nashville Predators. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's hashtag Bell Let's Talk Day here on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. At Rumors all this week and this weekend, Graham Clark is in town. One show tonight. You still got time to get down there if you want to check out some comedy tonight. And then you got two shows on Friday and Saturday. So Graham Clark at Rumors Comedy Club, and just announced a special concert series event coming up May 3rd through 5th. You know him from season 10 of America's Got Talent. Drew Lynch is going to be at Rumors. Tickets available right now. They just went on sale today. Drew Lynch at Rumors Comedy Club. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Trying to get a hold of Chris Mason to join us, talk about the Nashville Predators. Certainly they're in the news, as you would expect, given that they're one of the upper echelon teams in the NHL and in the Western Conference, but they made a real unexpected move today. Nobody saw this coming. Mike Fisher coming out of retirement to rejoin the Nashville Predators in time for the playoff stretch drive. I mean, Mike Fisher, everyone sort of thought he was going to go out last year after getting to the Stanley Cup final, but looks like they talked him into coming back and joining what is now an absolute jam-packed, loaded Nashville Predators forward group.
Yeah, I was texting with Chris Mason earlier today talking about Mike Fisher. Of course, Chris played with Mike Fisher when he was a member of the Nashville Predators organization. But absolutely, Drew, I think it caught everyone by surprise. He was really good for Nashville last year, going to the Stanley Cup final, almost winning the cup, obviously bowing out to the Pittsburgh Penguins eventually. But when you're talking about Mike Fisher, I mean, with the moves that the Predators have made, bringing in Nick Bonino, bringing in Kyle Turris, you kind of wonder, you know, Mike Fisher really now slots in as your fourth line center when in previous years he was either your number one or number two center. So I think Mike Fisher knows now that the Predators have brought in some players. I mean, he knows that he's going to be now playing that kind of bottom three, bottom six role. But there's lots left in the tank. And, you know, we don't know exactly when Mike Fisher is going to come back into the lineup. But when you've done so much for this organization, I think all of the players in that dressing room are going to welcome him back with open arms.
He hasn't officially signed. He'll do that sometime between now and the trade deadline. That's, of course, when he has to sign by. I would expect that he's probably going to skate with the team and practice with the team, and assuming that he still has something left in the tank, as we all expect, that's when he's going to sign the contract. I mean, you look at them up the middle now, and you got to consider this, you know, an arms race against the Winnipeg Jets. Johansson, Turris, Bonino, and now Fisher up the middle. That's a pretty good top four centerman, not to mention that there's other guys who are playing on the wing now in Nashville that can play up the middle. Does that change your perspective, your perception of what the Jets might need to do as you approach the trade deadline, or is it just a move that can exist in the vacuum of the Nashville Predators organization?
Yeah, it's a good question, Drew. And, you know, we should mention Colton Sissons as well, who, you know, last year played a significant role for the Predators up the middle. At one point, he was the Nashville Predators' number one center, if you remember correctly. So, I mean, a guy like Colton Sissons, I mean, does that mean that he's going to move to the wing? I mean, the Predators are so good up the middle. But as far as what the Jets may or may not do, I mean, we've talked about this in previous weeks, Drew. I mean, for me, I think the Jets are pretty good up the middle now that Adam Lowry's back in the lineup and Mark Scheifele's going to be back in the lineup as early as next week. If it's not next week, it's going to be the week after next week. So, I mean, for me, Scheifele, Little, Lowry, Hendricks up the middle is still pretty darn good. But, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff might look at his roster and say, you know, I might want to bring in, you know, a third line center or a fourth line center, you know, as an upgrade over what we've currently got. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, the Jets still match up pretty well. Are they the best up the middle in the league? No. I think Nashville, Anaheim, there are other teams that are better. Minnesota's pretty good up the middle as well. So I don't necessarily know that Fisher coming back changes what the Jets are going to do, but I mean, it definitely bolsters the Predators lineup because it's not like Mike Fisher, guys, you know, last year wasn't a key contributor. I mean, he was a key piece for the Predators up the middle. He was excellent during the playoffs. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what kind of role he plays, but it's definitely not going to be, you know, a top six role or a third line center role because they're already really set up the middle.
With players who, you know, all due respect to Mike Fisher, have surpassed him in terms of their skill set at the moment. Sean, do the Predators have enough offense? 17th right now in goals for. I mean, we know that how good they are on the back end, probably the best defense 1-6 on the back end, and Pekka Rinne very solid in net. You know, are you concerned at all with the Predators' offense, or do you think that, you know, the battle-tested nature of the team, where goals are harder to come by in a playoff series, but having gone all the way to the Western, to the Stanley Cup Finals last year, will leave them okay and in decent shape when it comes to offensively come April and playoffs?
Yeah, we've been talking about this almost for about a month now, how just like the intensity picks up around the league and goal scoring just kind of drops league wide. So you're looking at those teams that are comfortable in those close games and those mucker grinder playoff style games. Nashville, what better experience than all the way to the Cup final? And it is real impressive as to what they've been able to do with regards to defense and that D core. And then when you get past the defense, you got Pekka Rinne that you got to attest with. But just I think the emergence of Kevin Fiala, you bring in Kyle Turris, a guy who is a responsible two-way center. I think the lack of goal scoring kind of gets offset by the responsibility and the depth in this team. And I don't think, if you're not worried from inside, which I don't think the Predators are, I don't think you need to be worried from the outside.
Yeah, Sean, I'm not worried at all about goal scoring when it comes to the Nashville Predators. And as you mentioned, I mean, it's still, you know, the best top four, top six D in the entire league. And, you know, Kevin Fiala, you're right, he's having a great year. This team can score a lot of goals. And, you know, 17th, Drew, what are we talking about? We're talking about middle of the pack in the NHL. If they score, you know, five or six more goals, you know, they're top 10 in the league or something like that. So, I mean, this team can score goals, you know, and really it's going to come down to goaltending. Pekka Rinne has been excellent this year. So a very talented roster up and down, and they're going to be battling with the Jets and the Blues for the Central Division crown for the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, they certainly are going to be right in there. I mean, right now the Jets are ahead of them in the Central Division standings, but of course the Predators do have those three games in hand. So if they were to win out on those three games, they would leapfrog the Winnipeg Jets. You know, it's going to be a real battle in the Western Conference and especially in the Central Division as the, you know, we get closer and closer throughout the month of January is over and we have, you know, February, March, and April left before the playoffs really kick into high gear that first week of April, of course, the end of the regular season. This Predators team, I still think that they are the best team in the Western Conference, all due respect to what the Jets have been doing as of late. To me, the Predators I think the what's likely, I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but you know, forgive me for that. What's likely to be the second round matchup, which is a shame that it's a second round matchup between the Jets and the Predators, is likely going to determine who is your Western Conference representative. Come into the Stanley Cup Finals. The caveat I'm going to put on that: the team that scares me the most, and they're still tooth and nail to make the playoffs, is the Anaheim Ducks.
Well, Drew, it's too early to say who it's going to come down to. I mean, we've still got 30 games left in the regular season. I mean, right now, sure, you would say that, you know, the Nashville Predators and the Jets are favorites to represent the Western Conference, but there are many different teams in the Western Conference. So I don't think you can, you know, start to say, that it's going to come down to the Jets and Predators.
Well, I think the three best teams in the West right now, and then we can only look at this, you know, the snapshot of the here and the now. The three best teams, to my mind, are the Jets and the Predators. No surprise there. I think the Blues are maybe a half step below, just mm-hmm. the gut feeling I have from them. But I was so impressed with the Anaheim Ducks. And when the Ducks are healthy, as they are now, with the exception of Patrick Eves, but we know that he's lost for the season mm-hmm. as he tries to recover from his illness. The Ducks, the Jets, and the Predators, to me, are the three best teams in the Western Conference.
And you look at the moves the Ducks just made, adding Adam Henrique.
Easy for you to say.
Not really.
Yeah.
Down the middle. You talk about strength down the middle. Ryan Getzlaf, Ryan Kessler, Adam Henrique, Anton Vermette. That is a killer four centermen to go up against in the playoffs. Their worst centerman, or I should say their bottom centerman, is one of the best faceoff guys on the team.
Antoine Vermette.
He's
sort of
Vermette.
The quintessential, since he's come over from the Arizona Coyotes, he's sort of been that quintessential fourth line player for the Ducks. He's fit in seamlessly there. That Anaheim Ducks, I mean, that's the problem.
It's scary.
I mean, you hear that, you know, at the general managers meetings coming up in March, that there's some chatter afoot to maybe change the playoff format. I hope that happens, because I think the playoff format, you know, almost each year it gets worse and worse and more glaring just how inequitable the playoff format is. Because, you know, one team or two teams in the Pacific, one team between the second and third place team in the Pacific Division is going to qualify for the second round of the playoffs. And they're, you know, all due respect to those teams, they're not second round playoff teams this season. Just the nature of it's like when Calgary and Vancouver played in that first round a couple years ago, where neither team was really good enough to go anywhere. One of those teams, it was the Flames, made it to the second round just by virtue of the stupid playoff format.
The reality is, with the Vegas Golden Knights leading the Western Conference right now, it's completely wide open.
Yeah, I mean,
so I agree with you, Drew. The Jets and the Predators are the favorites right now. But even if you're the 8th seed, the Predators were the 8th seed last year. I mean, we've talked about this many times
yes.
before. Seeding doesn't really matter. So
just get in the dance.
It's a whole new season, you know, once mid-April comes along. But, I mean, for me, yeah, the Jets and the Predators are definitely the favorites right now.
When we come back, we're going to look at the out-of-town scoreboard, and we'll get you up to date on some of the latest trade chatter from throughout the NHL. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
One final segment this Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290. This is NHL This Week. Of course, in case you missed any of the program, it'll be available for download on illegalcurve.com, on tsn1290.ca, or just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. That's just the easiest way to do it. I don't know what you're waiting for. I've been saying this now for, oh, really, 6, 7, 8 years? I can't even keep track anymore. Although, when we first started the show, were podcasts a thing when we first started the show, Ezzy?
I think they were just starting back then.
Yeah? Okay. It's been a long time, and I've had a couple kids, so my brain really doesn't work nearly as well as it once did. Quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard on a typically quiet Wednesday evening. And for Jets fans, not a lot of scoreboard watching necessary. None of the Central Division teams are in action, and only one team from outside the Eastern Conference actually in action tonight. That's the San Jose Sharks. After 20 minutes in Joe Louis Arena, the Sharks and the Red Wings tied up at 0 goals apiece, so not much to report out of there. In Toronto tonight, the Islanders have a grand. This can't be right. I mean, I need to double check this.
You saw what I'm looking at right now.
That can't be right. They're down 2-0. That, I believe, is correct. The New York Islanders threw almost 30 minutes of play, so almost halfway through the game tonight in Toronto, have 3 shots on goal.
22-3.
They were outshot 13-3 in the first period, and they've been outshot 9-0 so far in the second period. So things aren't going so well for the Islanders. They have 4 shots now, Chris Curry tells me. They've managed to get their first shot of the second period. So shots on goal in Toronto, 22-4 in favor of the Leafs. They lead the Islanders 2-0. Kasperi Kapanen gets his 3rd goal of the year, and Austin Matthews gets his 23rd goal of the year. So the Islanders, who are tooth and nail battling to stay in the race in the Eastern Conference, are down 2-0 to the Leafs. The Leafs, of course, pretty solidly, pretty much guaranteed to finish 3rd in the Atlantic Division. As you know, we know the rest of the Atlantic is horrible, so they're not going to get caught because they're 15 points up on their next closest opponent in the division, the Florida Panthers, and they're 5 points behind the Bruins with 3 games in hand. One other game tonight on the out-of-town scoreboard, the Philadelphia Flyers, they're into Washington. Things are going well for the city of Philadelphia. They hope that continues on Sunday night as well with the Super Bowl. The Flyers, they're up 2-0 on the Capitals after 20 minutes. Nolan Patrick gets his 4th goal of the season, so nice to see him on the scoreboard. And Travis Konecny gets his 11th of the season for the Flyers, who have a 2-0 lead. Flyers into a playoff spot right now. Sort of were struggling for a while there earlier in the year. They've been playing good hockey as of late. 8-2 in their last 10. With a win tonight, they would leapfrog the New Jersey Devils, if I'm not mistaken. No, they tie the Devils for 3rd in the Metropolitan Division, but they would leapfrog the Columbus Blue Jackets. So keep an eye on the Philadelphia Flyers. They're doing a good number against the Washington Capitals tonight. Let's look at some of the trade chatter from around the NHL as of late, as we're a month away from the trade deadline. Max Pacioretty of the Montreal Canadiens, quote, unlikely to be traded at the deadline, but the Habs are also torn on what to do with Thomas Plekanec. So what do you think is going to happen with Pacioretty and Plekanec?
Yeah, it's a question that you definitely have to ask where the Montreal Canadiens are in the standings right now. But, you know, that's a big decision to trade your captain. So right now, I know there are a lot of people looking at the Montreal Canadiens and they're saying, well, could they move Max Pacioretty or Thomas Plekanec? And, you know, for me, you have to also look at their contract situations right now. But it's a possibility with the way the season has gone.
Chris Mason is called back. We were going to have him on last segment, hopefully, but he's going to join us now quickly as we're right up almost against the show. So, Chris, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening. Sorry, guys. I just pick up there with my 3-month-old, and I left my phone in the other room, so I apologize for that.
No need to apologize. I have a 5-month-old, so I know exactly what that's all about. Chris, obviously wanted to talk to you about the big news surrounding the Nashville Predators earlier today. I guess when you were sitting around and the news broke, I bet you had to do a bit of a double take to see Mike Fisher coming back out of retirement to join the Predators for this stretch run, and hopefully for the Predators and their fans, a lengthy playoff run.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something that, everybody kind of secretly had hoped for when they heard Mike Fisher was retiring, and he even said himself in the press conference that his buddy said, well, that's good, you can just sit out the first 6 months, then the last half you can come back and be ready for playoffs. And he even said himself there's no way he's going to do that. And, you know what it's like when first a player retires, the first couple months are okay, and then he said by December he started really missing it. And the team had called him and approached him, and at first, again, it was a no, and the longer it went on and the closer it came to him to having to make a decision, he wanted to do it. So it's a great thing, and this is a great addition. It doesn't cost him anything. He's going to take a few weeks and get ready. They're not going to rush it, and this is a master plan. You know, they had the issues in playoffs with Fisher and Johansson going down, so they got caught with a little less depth. And they're not going to make that mistake again this year. And so that was a great move, and everybody here is really happy.
You know, Chris, we were talking about it last segment. Does the most does it make the most sense that Mike Fisher would come back as a fourth line center, considering all the moves the Predators have made?
Yeah, I think he's not opposed to anything. He's coming back as a support, as a depth guy wherever he fits in. I mean, if he starts playing and he's looking good and you know, he's getting results, you could see him on a power play, you could see him penalty killing. Everything's kind of up in the air, and you know, they're not going to say or state what position he's going to play. They're just going to see how it goes. But I think you know, knowing Mike Fisher and having been a teammate of his, I know what kind of person he is, and he's kept in good shape in his retirement, and now he's starting to go. So I don't expect it to take long. You might probably look, or a date could be the February 26th day where they can expand the rosters a little bit, but who knows.
Chris, very similar to the situation kind of in Winnipeg with Mark Scheifele going down, Philip Forsberg goes down for the Preds, and the team is still able to not only tread water, but continue to win games in an extremely competitive Central Division. Is that just kind of a testament to the depth within the Predators organization?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of parallels between the Preds and the Jets. I think the depth, they've got good goaltending and solid defense, and I think if you have that combination, you can withstand those injuries. The other teams that, you know, get into trouble are the ones that if they lose one of their star players and they don't have the depth, it's tough, you know, to make up that production because you don't have guys that can fill in. And I think both teams are capable of playing multiple different ways. So the Preds, for example, they lose Philip Forsberg. Well, they're not scoring as many goals, but they're able to lock it down defensively, and they've got that strong goaltending. So they can play any kind of game that they need to be successful because they have those defensemen, those top four defensemen. They've got a lot of depth down the middle. And, yeah, it was no problem. They didn't really change how they played, but they really were, I think, a lot better defensively with him out of the lineup because they knew that they didn't have that constant goal-scoring production.
Chris Mason is our guest on NHL This Week. Chris Mason is a broadcast analyst with the Nashville Predators. Chris, you know, obviously the Predators, they've had a very good season. You know, they're second in the Central Division. You know, they got games in hand on the Jets. Do you get the impression, being around the team on a game-in, game-out basis, that the motto might be unfinished business, given how close they came last year, getting all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals, falling, of course, to the Pittsburgh Penguins? Do you get the feeling that there's a sense of unfinished business in the Predators' locker room?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Coming into camp this year was a completely different feeling. You know, this is an organization that's been on the brink of, you know, having success for a lot of years, but they've never really gotten over the hump. They've never got out of the second round. So I think, you know, as a player, I never got there. So I think until you do it as a team, you don't really know for sure if you can do it. And I think that's kind of always how this team was in past. You know, they thought maybe we could. We have some good players. We've got some good teams. But they've never known for certain that they could until last year. And I think the expectation level in that dressing room, you know, with the coaches or the management, completely changed. And that's the exact way that I felt about this team. They have unfinished business, and their expectations are sky high. And now they know, you know, they're capable of getting there. So it has been a completely different mindset, and just the confidence level and the belief system that these guys seem to have, that you know, swagger that they exude as a team, I think is a result of what happened last year in the playoffs.
Now, Chris, one last question for you here. Just going back to the 2018 NHL All-Star Game in Tampa Bay, was the highlight for you as a former goaltender watching Pekka Rinne and Marc-Andre Fleury go save for save in that longest save streak competition?
That was great. First of all, both those guys are, you know, two of the best guys in the game. Great personalities. Nobody could ever say a bad thing about either one of those guys. And when they're going back and forth, I love the All-Star format now. I think everybody does. It's great. But that for as a goalie, and you're seeing that display against the best players in the world, that was impressive and definitely a highlight of the weekend.
Chris Mason covers the Nashville Predators as a broadcast analyst. Chris, appreciate your time. Thanks for calling us back this evening.
All right, thanks, guys. Sorry about the delay. Appreciate you.
All good, Chris. Appreciate you as well. That's Chris Mason of the Nashville Predators. Always great to have him on. And that's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. Big thanks to Chris Mason. Before him, Jim Cerny and Dan Duva, Vegas Golden Knights broadcaster. In case you missed any of the show, it's available on illegalcurve.com, on tsn1290.ca, and wherever you get your podcasts. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Chris, doing a great job behind the board as always. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. And until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.